Translation: all beings, both moving and non-moving, from the four-headed Lord Brahma down to the most insignificant living entity, had taken forms and were differently worshipping those Vishnu Murtis according to their respective capacities, with various means of worship, such as dancing and singing. Srila Prabhupada's purport. Innumerable living entities are engaged in different types of worship of the Supreme, according to their abilities and karma. But everyone is engaged, Jivera Svarupahaya, Krishna Ranityadas. There is no one who is not serving. Therefore, the Mahabhagavata, the topmost devotee, sees everyone as being engaged in the service of Krishna. Only himself does he see as not engaged. We have to elevate ourselves from a lower position to a higher position. And the topmost position is that of direct service in Vrindavan. But everyone is engaged in service. Denial of the service of the Lord is Maya. Ekale Ishvara Krishna Arasabha Britya Yareya Chana Chaya Setaiche Karanritya. Only Krishna is the Supreme Master, and all others are his servants. As Krishna desires, everyone dances according to his tune. From Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita Adi Lila, chapter 5, 142. There are two kinds of living entities, the moving and the non-moving. Trees, for example, stand in one place, whereas ants move. Brahma saw that all of them, down to the smallest creatures, had assumed different forms and were accordingly engaged in the service of Lord Vishnu. One receives a form according to the way one worships the Lord. In the material world, the body one receives is guided by the demigods. This is sometimes referred to as the influence of the stars. As indicated in Bhagavad Gita 3.27 by the words Prakrite Kriyamanani, according to the laws of nature, one is controlled by the demigods. All living entities are serving Krishna in different ways, but when they are Krishna conscious, their service is fully manifest. As a flower in the bud gradually fructifies and yields its desired aroma and beauty, so when a living entity comes to the platform of Krishna consciousness, the beauty of his real form comes into full blossom. That is the ultimate beauty and the ultimate fulfillment of desire. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jananjana Salakaya Chakshuram Melitam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam. So, I guess by now, having gone through 50 verses of this chapter, that pretty much everyone is familiar with this most elaborately described and extraordinarily beautiful chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam, where the most extraordinary leela is taking place. And this, of course, being the last chapter that Srila Prabhupada personally translated and commented on, is also very significant for us. And particularly this chapter, and of course the preceding and ongoing chapters, Srila Prabhupada very kindly presented to us in the form of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, or the Krishna Book, as it is generally known. So there is enormous scope for understanding so much about the science of Krishna consciousness from this one chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam. And as we begin to try to open up one purport of this one verse of Srimad Bhagavatam, it's surprising how much there is to discuss with very little time at our disposal. So we're not like Brahma, who has the lifespan of the whole universe as his duration of life. This pastime is very nicely presented as a product of the playful nature of Lord Krishna, which is also passed down because, after all, we take our nature ultimately from Lord Krishna's nature. And Lord Brahma, he was also, according to Srila Prabhupada's Krishna book, playfully taking away the calves and the cowherd boys. But because life isn't one static, simple emotion, there were other things going on in Brahma's mind, such as recognizing that actually he was doing something quite dangerous. And there was also an emotion of fear, because he recognized that while he was playing, he was actually playing with fire, because Krishna is his master, and he was actually trying to play a trick on Krishna by taking away the calves and the cowherd boys. And so the extraordinary pastime is unfolded as we see that this pastime kind of stems from the killing of Agasura, which took place earlier in the day. And the whole extraordinary incidents of Krishna killing Agasura wasn't discussed for one whole year in Vrindavan. And Shukadeva Goswami, he becomes very enlivened by the questions of Maharaj Parikshit, that he wants to know why it wasn't discussed for a whole year. And so this pastime starts to be explained and unfolded, that it was because Lord Brahma had stolen all the calves and cowherd boys. And just as we see how when Brahma had stolen them and put them to rest by the influence of his mystic power, Krishna was feeling great affection for his friends, the cowherd boys. And so they were feeling very disturbed because their calves had disappeared. And so Krishna, he didn't want them to disturb their lunch engagement. So he said, "Don't worry, I'll go and find them." So in this way, this little cowherd boy who was standing there with a lump of rice and some fruit salad and yogurt, which, as the Krishna book describes, could clearly be seen through the petal-like joints of his left hand, he went wandering through the forest to try to find the calves. And he looked everywhere, the caves, he looked in the bushes, the trees, everywhere, tried to find them. But he was not able to find them. So he came back, and he saw that also the cowherd boys had disappeared. So he could understand that Brahma was playing a trick, but because he didn't want to disturb the loving dealings between the parents and the children, and he was thinking in terms of he didn't want to return home empty-handed and disappoint all the mothers of the calves and the cowherd boys, that he decided to expand himself, as all these calves and cowherd boys, in such a beautiful way, and so exactly and so expertly, that even their mothers couldn't tell the difference. Now normally, if a child is in a crowd, the mother can very easily pick out her child. You know, it's very straightforward. You know who your child is. But in this instance, nobody could tell the difference. Krishna, because he is the master of all mystics, he was concealing the fact that he himself was playing the part of all these children and the calves from everyone, even from Balaram. Krishna was concealing this from even his own immediate expansion. And Balaram, of course, he got a big surprise when he saw this extraordinary incident that happened about a year later. Of course, Balaramji, why didn't he know that all this was going on? It just so happened that on the day that Agasura was killed, it happened to be Balaram's appearance day. And so he wasn't in the forest that day. He was at home performing the rites for a birthday, which actually involves giving presents to others as opposed to getting presents oneself. And so he wasn't actually present in the pasturing grounds with Krishna and all the cowherd boys on that day. So he didn't actually know what had gone on, it appears. And so when he saw the extraordinary incident of the cows on the top of Govardhan Hill being so eager to actually unite with their children, the calves, which were being taken care of at the bottom of Govardhan Hill by the cowherd boys, he saw this extraordinary sight. I mean, you know, when animals, you know, when a horse or a cow gallops, they sort of, they don't just sort of canter like that. They're actually running with joined front and rear legs. And they're really running and running. And these cows, not even caring for the rough ground on the stones on the Govardhan Hill, they came running down the hill to greet their calves out of great affection, because the calves were also Krishna. And the cowherd men who were feeling also, again, we learn Srimad Bhagavatam that life is all about a mixture of emotions. Because the cowherd men, they were trying with all their strength to restrain the cows, because the cows are meant to be separated after a while from their calves so that the calves don't drink all the milk. And but they were unable to restrain the cows. And so they were feeling ashamed that they couldn't actually do their job properly. And they were also feeling a bit angry that, you know, this is going on. But then when they also came running down the hill after the calf, after the cows, who were in great delight licking the bodies of their calves and displaying such overwhelming affection, and the calves were also very happily taking the milk from the cows, then it was a very extraordinary situation, because the cowherd men had come down in that ashamed and angry mood. But when they saw their own children, who were also Krishna in the form of his expansions, the cowherd men, they forgot everything and they embraced their children and with great delight, and they were smelling their heads and feeling great ecstasy. So this extraordinary pastime was going on. And Balaramji, he could understand that something strange is going on here. This is a very unusual display of affection going on here, when they don't need so much affectionate dealings. And he started meditating in himself to try to understand what was happening. And he could think at first that, well, this could only happen if some greatly important living being or some demigods had played some mystical trick. But then he could understand that actually this was Krishna doing this. Krishna was doing this. And so he asked Krishna that, what's going on here? And so Krishna briefly explained to him the situation of all the events that had taken place. So Balaramji, he could understand what was happening. And of course, Balaram, he considers Krishna his worshipable supreme personality of Godhead. Because all the expansions and incarnations, as is explained in this verse, in Prabhupada's purport, and the verse, they're all meant for worshipping Krishna, the big souls and the little souls like us. And even though Lord Brahma, he's not an ordinary living entity, when we talk about living entities, generally we're referring to the living entities as disposed to the as opposed to the jivas. We're talking about the jivas who've taken different forms in this material world, which is basically all of us, because none of us are these bodies. We're actually, we've all assumed these different bodies according to, as Srila Prabhupada explains here in the purport, that he says one receives a form according to the way one worships the Lord. And that this is going on under the guidance of the demigods who are acting out according to the laws of material nature. They're acting according to Krishna's laws, because after all, Krishna is saying, Prakrite Kriyamanani, that this material nature is working under my direction. And the modern understanding is that there are various astrological influences, but they neglect the fact that behind the stars, there are living entities, the demigods, who have different aspects of control over the material nature. There's always somebody behind it. And as I was coming down the M1 from Leicester today, I could appreciate this nice example that you get miles and miles and miles of 50-mile-an-hour roadworks, but there never seems to be anyone there doing any work on the roads. It's very extraordinary, actually. But it's not that those things have just happened by chance, but someone has put all those roadworks there, and there's a plan and a design, even though they take practically a day of Brahma to get the roadworks sorted out. Practically speaking, the whole principle is that there are personalities behind these influences which affect the way we live and experience life in this world. So the guidance is going on, and here in this verse we're seeing the very extraordinary way in which Lord Krishna is giving a very humbling and enlightening experience to Lord Brahma. Because Lord Brahma is getting, he's getting a taste of his own medicine, actually. He's thinking, well, I'll display my mystic power and take away all the calves and cowherd boys. And Krishna's effectively saying, all right, well, I'll show you my mystic power and leave you really wondering what on earth is going on. And so in this situation, just to recap a few verses, just so we've got the idea of what's going on. Thus, because Lord Brahma wanted to mystify the all-pervading Lord Krishna, who can never be mystified, but who on the contrary mystifies the entire universe, he himself was put into bewilderment by his own mystic power. As the darkness of snow on a dark night and the light of a glowworm in the light of a day, in the light of day have no value, the mystic power of an inferior person who tries to use it against a person of greater power is unable to accomplish anything. Instead, the power of that inferior person is diminished. So we can see the nature in the material world is people like to play these games of one-upmanship. Well, I'm better than you, and no, I'm better than you. And this envy is going on in the material world in practical terms, that I want you to envy me by my prowess or my facilities or wealth or beauty or whatever it may be. And you want to me to envy you. This is the nature of materialistic life. But still, these extraordinary behaviors exist in a very wonderful way in the behavior of the Supreme Lord. So then, while Brahma looked on, all the calves and the boys tending them immediately appeared to have complexions the color of bluish rain clouds, and to be dressed in yellow silken garments. All those personalities had four arms, holding conch shell, disc, mace, and lotus flower in their hands. They wore helmets on their heads, earrings on their ears, and garlands of forest flowers around their necks. On the upper portion of the right side of their chests was the emblem of the goddess of fortune. Furthermore, they wore armlets on their arms, the Kaustubha gem around their necks, which were marked with three lines like a conch shell, and bracelets on their wrists. With bangles on their ankles, ornaments on their feet, and sacred belts around their waists, they all appeared very beautiful. Every part of their bodies, from their feet to the top of their heads, was fully decorated with fresh, tender garlands of tulsi leaves, offered by devotees engaged in worshipping the Lord by the greatest pious activities, namely, hearing and chanting. Those Vishnu forms, by their pure smiling, which resembled the increasing light of the moon, and by the sidelong glances of their reddish eyes, created and protected the desires of their own devotees, as if by the modes of passion and goodness. And then we see in today's verse, all beings, both moving and non-moving, from the four-headed Lord Brahma down to the most insignificant living entity, had taken forms and were differently worshipping those Vishnu Murtis according to their respective capacities, with various means of worship, such as dancing and singing. So, by way of setting the scene here, we can appreciate that there is much extraordinary information given in these Bhagavatam verses, which are Parana ko dunoditaha, as brilliant as the sun. We're coming down the motorway again and seeing the sunrise, this beautiful big orb, which just happens by some strange quirk of chance to be floating there in the sky and illuminating our lives. And of course, it all happens by chance, doesn't it? No brain behind it. No possible intelligence to make such a beautiful picture and wonderful existence for us. Could that be true? Could it just be happening all by chance? Do you ever do something wonderful and appreciate that, yes, that was pretty amazing? I'm surprised at how well that worked. And that's how Krishna felt, actually. When the children and the calves were all going into the mouths of Agasura, Krishna, he was also feeling like that, well, what I'm doing is pretty wonderful. Even my material energy is working very wonderfully. Because this whole extraordinary scene in Vrindavan is being played out as a continuous drama, which is always fresh and alive and is so extraordinary. And when we look at actually the pages of Srimad Bhagavatam, and we think that, yeah, actually, these extraordinary informations that we're getting here, they're somebody's imagination, and they're all written by primitive people who didn't have any understanding of science or advancement of life, which just happened to be written in a language which is far superior to the language which we use today. And really, they're all primitives. It just doesn't add up, really, does it? It doesn't make sense what we're presented with as being the facts of life according to modern science and modern scientific, so-called scientific thinking. But the science, even of the language of Srimad Bhagavatam, what to speak of the content of Srimad Bhagavatam, is so extraordinary that you couldn't make it up, actually. But Krishna can make it up, because he's always creating and thinking up new and wonderful pastimes to engage in. And even this one pastime is so elaborate and so extraordinary. There's so much going on here in this pastime that when we actually read through this extraordinary pastime and see all the different things that are happening, that how could this be just a work of somebody's imagination? Only Krishna's imagination. So Krishna, he's inventing the most wonderful pastimes. In fact, one place is described that Krishna himself is newly invented youth. He's ever fresh. He's very beautiful. And he's a playful cowherd boy. And he's still playing with Brahma when Brahma finally comes to his senses and realizes that he's made a big mistake and he's seen all these Vishnu Murtis worshipping Krishna in so many different ways. And he comes and repeatedly falls down. Dandavats means falling down. It's described he fell down like a golden stick. This is actually dandavats. We talk about, you know, dandavats, but we don't really understand the meaning generally. But it actually means falling down, boom, like a stick. And Brahma was doing this repeatedly for quite some time because he really was appreciating something of his actual position with Lord Krishna. And we can learn a lot from this about appreciating what is our position, because we're nowhere near of the prowess and extraordinarily potent type personality as Lord Brahma, who can engineer a universe. And Lord Brahma, he's developed this humble mentality, and then he's recognizing that this Supreme Personality of Godhead, who's standing there with a year later with a lump of rice and fruit salad and yogurt in the palm of his hand, just as he was a year ago, is actually the Supreme Person, his own father. And in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, we see Brahma, he's addressing Krishna and saying, "Are you not Narayan, my father?" Because he's very bewildered by this time. And Krishna, this little boy, he's standing there looking up at Brahma and saying, "Well, Brahma, I'm just a cowherd boy." And the whole experience is quite extraordinary. And it's only then that Brahma, he kind of gets the idea that Krishna, he's playing his pastimes here. He's having fun. And I'm actually just in the way. Even Brahma, the creator of the universe, he's actually in the way. He's getting in the way of Krishna's pastimes. So he realizes it's time to back off and ask permission to kindly leave and get out of the way. And Krishna gestures, "Yeah, you can go." So Krishna is playing. He's enjoying wonderful pastimes, which are being described here in the most extraordinary pages of Srimad Bhagavatam. So looking at this purport, very little time left, sorry to say. The point is that every living being is engaged in service. There's no doubt about it. We're given bodies according to our mentality. And as Krishna describes, the sort of body we get, each as they surrender to me, I reward them accordingly. So Krishna has provided us all with different types of bodies. And Brahma is seeing how, he's seeing the fact that all the living beings are worshipping all the living entities, all the different varieties of living entities are engaged in service of one sort or another. Even if you're a flea on a flea, because nowadays in modern science, people have learned how to take pictures and they see that fleas also have tiny little fleas biting them on their body. Microscopic little creatures. And that, but from the tiniest insignificant living entities down to, up to, the greatest, Lord Brahma, everyone's engaged in service. And everyone's engaged in service, but what are they serving? They're actually serving, not only they themselves are part of Krishna's energy, because as we learn from Bhagavad Gita, we're all marginal living beings, marginal potency of Krishna. We're actually, all of us, Krishna's potency. All the living beings, all the things are all Krishna. And the living beings are all playing their different roles, engaged in service, ultimately service to Krishna. And Brahma, he's able to get the perception of a Mahabhagavata here, because he's seeing how all the living beings are engaged in service to Krishna, but it's only him who's not serving Krishna. This is how the Mahabhagavata thinks on the topmost platform. But of course, the other living entities, there are two other sorts. There's the living entities who don't recognize that they're servants of Krishna, but there are the devotees who recognize that actually we have to be engaged in some service to Krishna. And the third class devotees, they see the deity in the temple and they just worship the deity and they don't take much interest in serving the other Vaishnavas. But the second class devotee makes the discrimination between the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the devotees, the innocent, and the envious. And we have to come to that platform of discrimination. We have to come to that second class platform in order to preach, or the Mahabhagavata has to come down to that platform from his position of seeing everyone's already engaged in service to Krishna, in order to be able to make the necessary discrimination and explain to others and help others understand who is Krishna, who we are, what we are, that we're also the energies of Krishna. We're also parts of Krishna. We're meant for serving Krishna. So from this one verse, we're getting an indication of the whole spectrum of life in the universe and beyond the universe. So Prabhupada is explaining here, we have to elevate ourselves from a lower position to a higher position. Does that mean becoming a temple commander or a temple president or a temple manager or a GBC? No, it means becoming engaged and developing our consciousness. Because when we talk about advancement in spiritual life, we're talking about advancing our consciousness so that we actually understand we're eternal servants of Krishna. And of course, what happens if we understand we're eternal servants of Krishna? What next? Yeah. We have to be acting in that eternal occupation as eternal servants of Krishna. We have to serve. So this consciousness, this mentality of changing our consciousness is actually becoming free or becoming liberated from the misconceptions of life. And so what we're doing in devotional service, just by hearing and chanting and engaging in dancing and singing. By the way, I'm just going to mention this because I like to have a dig at people. That modern practices, although they may be chanting, sitting and feasting, actually we understand that Krishna consciousness is about chanting and dancing and feasting. So it's very nice coming in this morning and seeing everybody dancing very nicely. Thank you. So the idea is that we are learning to come out of ignorance, to get liberated from the ignorance of who we are. And that is what Srila Prabhupada is giving us. He's giving us actual liberation by developing our consciousness that we're becoming clear that we're eternal servants of Krishna. So then the question may come, well, I'm liberated by understanding I'm an eternal servant of Krishna, so how come I'm still under the influence of the modes of material nature. Is it a good question? So Prabhupada answers that question very nicely. He explains that just like if you're on the ocean, but you're in a boat, you're already on the transcendental platform. You're above the ocean. But the whole point is that if you're on a boat on the ocean, it's quite dangerous as well, because there are big waves and storms that can come and upset the boat, and we can feel the influence of those waves and storms. And unless we actually take guidance from a very good captain, then we may not stay on that transcendental platform. We might find ourselves back in the ocean. So therefore, the spiritual master, his role is very important to give us guidance how to actually stay on the transcendental platform. And therefore, we have all these practical advantages of understanding that we can progress in our spiritual lives and we can come to the fulfillment of our spiritual lives. Whereas Prabhupada puts it in the last paragraph, he says, all living entities are serving Krishna in different ways, but when they're Krishna conscious, their service is fully manifest. As the flower in the bud gradually fructifies and yields its desired aroma and beauty, so when a living entity comes to the platform of Krishna consciousness, the beauty of his real form comes into full blossom. So this is what we're trying to go for. Prabhupada says that is the ultimate beauty and the ultimate fulfillment of desire. So we've got a couple of minutes left if anybody has any questions they'd like to ask on the topics of the verse and what we've been speaking. That would be very nice.